thanking George for reading that, and also for thanking the congregation for this opportunity to stand before you and to deliver a lesson from God's Word. I would be lying if I said that this was not nerve-wracking, and it's not because I haven't done this before, and it's not because for the first time on a Sunday evening both my parents are here to stare at me whilst I do this. It's none of that. It's because that I have a responsibility up here to be a good example and to deliver the Word of God effectively and to deliver it in truth. And I think sometimes when we are examining the Bible, it's full of examples, absolutely full of examples, and that is the title of my lesson tonight. And sometimes we have examples like we have this morning, where good and evil are diametrically imposed or opposed. And good is represented in one person, and evil is represented in another person or in another group of people. The good this morning was Jeremiah, but the evil were the people of Israel. And I think that sometimes maybe we get caught in that train of thought, that if I am to be a good person of God, then if I stumble and if I am evil, then there's no chance of redemption. It's almost like what we've been talking about in the heaven class, that some people think it's just too high a goal to obtain, and they just give up. But I wanted to give three examples tonight, three examples of godly people, people who are remembered for following God and how they fell. So the first one we're going to start out with is David. And I think that everyone knows one particular story pertaining to David, and that is in 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. And this is, of course, David versus Goliath. Who doesn't know that story? And so, we'll be starting in verse 1, and we'll kind of be skipping around the chapter. 17:1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle, which were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between Succoth, Azekah, in Ephes, Damim, and Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in a battle array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines, named Goliath, from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. This is a massive individual, just in case you didn't notice. He's huge. And so, in verse 8, he challenges Israel. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine, and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself, and let him come down to me." Now, I don't know about you, but if a giant, 10 feet tall, wanted to issue a one-on-one challenge with anyone in this room, I doubt that anyone would gladly and readily say, "Me!" Also, it's very interesting to note in the verse that the Bible describes him as a champion. This is not his first dance. He's been at it before. So he's obviously terrifying. And then verse 11. So incredibly discouraging. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. They probably had the same reaction as most of us. They were afraid. They didn't trust in God. And now our hero is introduced in verse 12. Now, David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, who had 8 sons. And the man was old and advanced in years in the days of Saul. And we learn in verse 13 that the 3 oldest sons of Jesse were actually on the front line. They were in the battle with Saul. In verse 14, David was the youngest, and the 3 oldest followed Saul. And then we learn in verse 15, David occasionally went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And this is interesting. Verse 16, many people overlook this fact. The Philistine drew near and presented himself 40 days, morning and evening, for 40 days. 40 days. A month and a bit, this guy was presenting himself. Do you have a challenger yet? Day 32. Anybody willing? Yet no one. Verse 23. Then as he talked with them, this is David talking to his brothers. There was a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines, and he spoke according to the same words that he spoke of before. So David heard them. He hears the challenge. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, and will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." So David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And the people answered him in this manner, saying, "So it shall be done for the man who kills him." I bet David's wondering something right now. It's indicated to me that in verse 23, after 40 days, that David is just being exposed to this challenge. It's not like he hears it every day and he's kind of pondering it and thinking over it. Man, I think I could probably do something about that. I don't know. Day 40, he hears it and he does something about it. So David's preparing to encounter this Philistine, verse 38. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head, and he also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, "I cannot walk in these, for I have not tested them." So David took them off. Then David took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag, in a pouch, which he had, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began drawing near David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And the Philistine looked about and saw David. He disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his God. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, or you come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin. But I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, and the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defiled." We know how the rest of the story goes. David overcomes Goliath. At this point in time, did David fully trust God? I think the answer is yes. mean, you'd have to be mildly insane to go up against an opponent like that with just a sling and a staff. David had tremendous faith in God. And he trusts God completely. At this point in David's life, we would say that he is a good person, that he is a righteous person, and that he's a good example. Next, I would like to take a little bit of a look at Solomon. In 1 Kings chapter 6, something that Solomon is kind of known for, and where his fame derives, is obviously he is the wisest man on earth. But also, in this chapter, he builds the temple. What an incredible thing. David couldn't do it, because he had too much blood on his hands. But Solomon could. And so, not going to read this entire passage, it's just a description of the materials used, how they're used, and how he built the temple. But Solomon did this, and the reason that I had George read that passage is, man, if you really look at that prayer, what a beautiful prayer. In verse 57 of chapter 8, 1 Kings chapter 8, in verse 57, may the Lord our God be with us as he was with our fathers. May he not leave us or forsake us. In verse 60 and 61, that all the peoples of the earth may know that the Lord is God, there is no other. That is an important verse to remember as we move on. Let your heart, therefore, be loyal to the Lord our God. That's another important verse to remember. To walk in his statutes and keep his commandments as at this day. Solomon concludes his prayer by praying to God to help them to be faithful, to stay true to God, and declares that there is no other. And so, he builds the temple. It's finished. It's beautiful. He offers this prayer. And we'll see what happens a little later on. But at that time, he was a good example. Next, I want to look at Moses. And I think automatically in your mind, the two things I'm about to say about him pop into your head. And one of those is that he led the people out of Egypt. That was his good example moment. In Exodus chapter 14. In Exodus 14. In verse 1 and 2, God's giving them instruction on where to go. And picking up in verse 3. So Pharaoh will say to the say of the children of Israel, they are bewildered by the land, and the wilderness has closed them in. Then I will harden Pharaoh's heart, so that he will pursue them. And I will gain honor over Pharaoh and over his army, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Lord. And they did so. This is Moses' good example moment. By leading the people out of Egypt, he is a catalyst for God to gain glory. He leads the people out of Egypt according to God's command, and then God is glorified through this. So, as we've been discussing, all three examples that I've showed you, one thing in common. They're all good examples. And God is glorified through these individuals and what they do by his command. And the other thing is that these are three prominent examples. People know about these people. These aren't obscure figures in the Bible that you ask people about and they're, huh? If you went out to anybody and said, who's Solomon? Who's David? Who's Moses? They would probably know who you were talking about. But the only thing is that they weren't perfect. They weren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And sometimes I think that we focus too much on the fantastic good things that these people do, that we forget that they were human too, and they made mistakes. Let's talk about David again, and Bathsheba. In 2 Samuel chapter 11, 2 Samuel 11, starting in verse 1, and it happened in the spring of the year, at the time when kings go out to battle, that David sent Joab, his servant, with him, and all of Israel, and they destroyed the people of Ammon and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. Then it happened one evening that David arose from his bed and walked onto the roof of the king's house, and from the roof he saw a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful to behold. So David sent and inquired about the woman and said, is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Elam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? Then David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her, for she was cleansed from her impurity, and she returned to her house. And the woman conceived, so she sent and told David and said, I am with child. Then David sent to Joab, saying, send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent Uriah to David. And when Uriah had come to him, David asked how Joab was doing, and how the people were doing, and how the war prospered. And David said to Uriah, go down to your house and wash your feet. So Uriah departed from the king's house, and a gift of food from the king followed him. But Uriah slept at the door of the king's house with all the servants of his lord, and did not go down to his house. So when they told David, saying, Uriah did not go down to his house, David said to Uriah, did you not come from a journey? Why did you not go to your own house? And Uriah said to David, the ark and Israel and Judah are dwelling in tents, and my lord Joab and the servants of my lord are encamped in the open fields. Shall I then go to my house to eat and drink and to lie with my wife? As you live and as your soul lives, I will not do this thing. Then David said to Uriah, wait here today also, and tomorrow I will let you depart. So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. Now when David called him, he ate and drank before him, and he made him drunk. And at evening he went out to lie on his bed with the servants of his lord, but he did not go down to his own house. And in the morning when it happened that David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it by the hand of Uriah, and he wrote in the letter saying, set Uriah in the forefront of the hottest battle, and retreat from him, that he may be struck down and die. So it was, while Joab besieged the city, that he assigned Uriah to a place where he knew there were valiant men. Then the men of the city came out and fought with Joab, and some of the people of the servants of David fell, and Uriah the Hittite died also. This is one of those passages that just makes you sigh. David sleeps with another man's wife. He finds out that she's pregnant. He tries to cover it up. When that doesn't work, he kills her husband. Does this sound like a God-fearing man to you? And does this sound like a good example to you? But keep in mind, this is the same David that put his full faith and full trust in God when he went up against Goliath. But he fell down flat. Next, let's talk a little bit about Solomon. And now, before we get into this, I want you to remember those two verses at the end of that prayer that George read for us. How he denied other gods. How he said there is no other God. And how he prayed for Israel to remain faithful to the one true God. 1 Kings chapter 11. We'll start in verse 1. But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, and Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord has said to the children of Israel, "You shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods." Solomon clung to these in love. And he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And his wives turned away his heart. For so it was, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. Verse 6, Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and did not fully follow the Lord as did his father David. In verse 41. No. In verse 37. Solomon gets a message about all this. So I will take you, and you shall reign over all your heart desires, and you shall be king over Israel. Then it shall be, if you heed all that I command in you, walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight, to keep my statutes and my commandments as my servant David did, then I will be with you and build for you an enduring house as I built for David and will give Israel to you. And I will afflict the descendants of David because of this, but not forever. Solomon therefore sought to kill Jeroboam, but Jeroboam arose and fled to Egypt. So Shishak, king of Egypt, and was in Egypt until the death of Solomon. That's a grueling chapter, isn't it? Just like the last one we read. Solomon does wrong, gets a message from the Lord about him doing wrong, and then Solomon dies. Solomon turned from God in sin. And because of this, God would punish David's descendants for a time. And next, Moses. In Numbers chapter 20, and we all know this account. Numbers 20. We'll start in verse 2. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together Moses and Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, "If only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord. Why have you brought us up to the assembly of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain, or figs, or vines, or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink." So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting, and they fell on their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Take your rod, you and your brother Aaron, and gather the congregation together. Speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. And thus you shall bring water for them from out of the rock, and give drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the whole assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, "Hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you from out of this rock?" Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation and their animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, "Because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them." Everything looked like it was going well. Moses goes up, he hears the concern of the people, and he and Aaron, they go back to the tabernacle, they fall on their faces, they ask God what to do. God gives them simple and clear instructions. And then instead of doing those simple and clear instructions, Moses disobeys. And this is the same Moses that led the people out of Egypt, who had faith in God. He fell down. He sinned. And because of that, there was a consequence. He didn't get to see the promised land. So, we're human. And we're all imperfect, and we all sin. I hope we've clearly seen this through this lesson, that these three godly, righteous men, even they sometimes fell flat. Even they sometimes failed. So then there's a question, what are you going to do about it? If you know that you're imperfect, you're human, you will sin, you have sinned, what are you going to do about it to make it right? If you haven't been baptized, then we would invite you to make that decision and be saved. If you have been baptized and you've been erring in some way, we pray also that you would come forward and make things right as we stand and sing.